You're listening to Beyond Bourbon Street, an insider's guide to New Orleans. Beyond Bourbon Street is the podcast where we explore the food, music, culture, places, and people that make New Orleans unique. Whether you are planning a trip, living in New Orleans, or simply wanting a taste of the Crescent City from wherever you are, you've come to the right place. And now, your host, Mark Bologna.
Hi, this is Mark. Welcome to episode 101. The last show was about a tragedy that's mostly forgotten. It took place in St. Bernard Parish, downriver from New Orleans. It happened in 1868, a time of lots of upheaval in New Orleans and across the country. Dozens of people were murdered, and yet almost no one knows the story today. I interviewed author Chris Deer to learn about this important time in our history. If you missed it, go back and give it a listen. You might want to do that when the kids aren't with you, though, if you have kids. Today's episode is about Louisiana's French history and how one New Orleanian helped lead the charge to have Louisiana join the Francophonie, an international organization that's focused on preserving French language and culture. We'll talk about Louisiana and New Orleans history, why joining this organization is good for Louisiana, and a whole lot more. But before we jump into today's discussion, I want to tell you about one of our sponsors who makes the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast possible. If you're listening to this podcast, it's a good bet you love New Orleans. If so, I have a great way for you to explore the city on a Two Chicks walking tour. My friend Christine Miller's company offers small, intimate tours that are a fun way to get to know New Orleans better. Marie and I went on the Garden District tour a while back and loved hearing about the history, the architecture, and the residents, both past and present. I'm still secretly hopeful I'll see Sandra Bullock every time I drive past her home, but no luck so far. Don't tell my wife. Lafayette Cemetery in the Garden District is closed indefinitely for repairs. So if New Orleans cemeteries pique your interest, try the Two Chicks walking tour of St. Louis No. 1. With Halloween right around the corner, you might also want to check out the Two Chicks Dead Sexy tour. It combines a visit to St. Louis Cemetery No. 1, followed by a discussion of the Red Light District Storyville, which we discussed back in episodes 34 and 35. Whatever you choose, know you're going to be in great hands and you'll have a wonderful time. The team over at Two Chicks is continually learning more about New Orleans, which means the tours are constantly evolving. Use code BEYOND and save 15% over at twochickswalkingtours.com. With that, let's meet our guests and learn about the International Organization of the Francophonie and why it matters to Louisiana. I am joined today by two guys who are going to talk about a subject that I am guessing most folks listening to the show haven't heard of. It really intrigued me, and I know it's going to intrigue you as well. I'm joined by Scott Tilton and Rudy Bazinet. Scott and Rudy, how are you?
Doing fine.
Good. How are you doing?
I'm good. When I first came across the topic, I actually got it from Scott's brother, Greg. Greg is a fellow podcaster here in New Orleans, and he said, hey, my brother's real interested in the tie between Louisiana and France. You should talk to him. And that kind of sent me down a rabbit hole. He sort of undersold that a little bit. We should mention, you guys are in Paris, right?
Yeah. And reading Paris.
Nice. And I think you're about 7 hours ahead of us here in New Orleans. Is that right?
That's right. So evening. Yeah.
So this episode is way beyond Bourbon Street, but it gets back to our French roots here in New Orleans. And so let's kind of set the stage. First of all, let's just give a very brief overview of what the organization, the International Organization of the Francophonie, is, and then we'll kind of back into that with how you guys come into play with it.
Yeah, sure. So first, maybe we could define the word Francophonie. So in French, it means French speaking. So the OEF, as we call it, that is the Organisation Internationale de la Francophonie, so the International Organization for Francophonie, was established in 1970 as an agency for to promote cooperation between French-speaking countries. So some of the founding members were, for instance, France, well, obviously, Haiti, Senegal, or Quebec. Then it grew over the years. It started with around 20 countries, and now there are approximately 88 countries that are members of the OIF. So the OIF is very active in the field of cultural cooperation. So it has different programs, scholarships, for instance. It also organizes conferences and international summits to bring together French speakers from around the world.
So, and that was Rudy speaking. I realize as we're recording this, I can see you guys, but our listeners, of course, won't have that benefit.
Yeah.
So that is the organization. But what's the tie to Louisiana, and how did we come to even be involved in the OEF?
Well, I guess one of the great things, and it's something that I had the opportunity growing up with, my father learned French and kind of spoke French with me. I had neighbors who actually spoke Creole. One of them is actually from the Caribbean. Another one was from Louisiana and spoke a form of Creole language that's from Louisiana itself. And I think growing up from a young age in the state, I think I realized that was part of the life and the fabric of the city. And I think it's something that we don't always talk about. But if we look back as recently as 1970, Louisiana had about 1 million French speakers, which is pretty hard to believe because today we're around 200,000. But I think one of the big questions is, how did we get there, and what's kind of the history of that Francophone and Creolophone, Creole-speaking and French-speaking populations in the state? And I think to do that, I think we can go back a long ways. You know, Louisiana, back in the 18th century, being founded by the French, and you had this kind of amazing melting pot culture that we love to discuss in Louisiana. But it really is, because I've always said that New Orleans, in particular, was born in the Caribbean and raised in America. We had all of these people that came in and started developing out the cultures that we know today as being French and Creole and Cajun and all these types of different terms that we use.
Well, and it makes sense to me because there are so many. It is such a melting pot, as you described, Scott. And everything from on the French side, you had the founding of the city as we know it today, but you also had the Acadians come from Canada, which we haven't done an episode yet specifically about the Acadians, and we will at some point. But maybe just for the few listeners that maybe haven't heard that story, there was a big influence, right? So you had the immigrants. Well, I'll let you guys tell the story about how we came to get that portion of our French culture here in Louisiana.
Well, I guess we can talk about the two groups, and I think these are the terms that we hear about in Louisiana a lot. You hear the term Creole and Acadian, and I think that let's maybe take the Creole first on this one. If you take a Creole, this is a term that you hear around the Caribbean, and it means a lot of different things to the different groups in the Caribbean. But I think given the influence that Louisiana, in particular, kind of the region around New Orleans had with the Caribbean, it's a term that comes in the 18th century and really develops both around the French-born population, but also people who, of African descent who are in Louisiana. And I think that in this meld and kind of melting pot of the state, this culture develops, and it's one of these, it's very much connected to the Caribbean, very much connected to that world. And it's one of the things that we can talk about in this is how that kind of builds up the culture of New Orleans and really builds up the communities that we see. The Acadians, it's another group. These are a French population that lands in Canada in this sort of 17th century with the founding of the kind of French provinces, of, you know, French regions of Canada. And what happens is in the 1760s, with a war between the French and the British, the Acadians up there refused to pledge loyalty to the British crown when they were taken over, when they were kind of taken by the British. And what happens is that they end up going and being expelled from the region of Acadia. So the Acadians find themselves all over the Americas for a little while. They're over on the Eastern Seaboard, they're down in the Caribbean, and eventually over time, groups of them start settling in what's a region called Attakapas in Louisiana, southwest of New Orleans. So what we associate as being modern day Lafayette and that region, New Iberia, and those populations, the Acadians start settling in that region. And I think it's neat because Acadians who settled in that region also came across Creole populations that were in the region. You really start seeing this idea of a Francophone, French-speaking, Creole-speaking identity in the state really start developing. And I think it's one that's developing over time, and these populations that come in really build up what that kind of looks like.
Yeah. And so I went to college in Lafayette when it was USL. Now it's University of Louisiana Lafayette. That was almost 30 years ago, but it was very common to have French speaking families there, you know, or at the very least Cajun French and English mixed in. And you had a lot of older people that only spoke French or sort of broken English. And that's, again, 25, 30 years ago.
For certain, I think that's a big part of the linguistic kind of development of the state, and what really drives the, you know, South Louisiana for a long time was you had native
Louisiana French speakers and Creole speakers all throughout South Louisiana. So for a long time, it was the kind of language of politics, the language of just the culture of the region and kind of how it all developed. And I think it becomes really interesting. I think you see a lot of people have family ties to this, but at the same time, even if you don't necessarily have family ties, I think there's this kind of inclusive image and something that we in Louisiana, I feel attached to and really find to be a really big imprint upon our culture.
Well, sure. And probably about 90% of our listeners are not from New Orleans, although most have been, but it influences, French culture influences us all the time, whether it's in the words we use, like the word lagniappe, of course, right? Or in our cooking. A lot of the architecture in the French Quarter is Spanish, but a lot of it is French as well. And I do think that it permeates not just in the language, and certainly we have immersion schools here, and we can talk about that and the tie to the OEF, but I do think it is such a part. You think about Antoine's, for instance, the restaurant and the impact there. You know, Antoine's is the oldest continuously operated family-owned restaurant in the United States. It dates back to the mid-1800s. And if you look at the menus, it's very, very French, even today. Right. Yeah. So you have that influence as well. So how did it come? So you grew up, Scott, you and your brother and your family grew up here in the city, but you grew up in a family that spoke French as well as English, right?
Yeah, well, we had our father who really learned French and kind of at a certain age started teaching me, at least. You know, I think that was kind of a decision that he made. And it's one that's, I think, maybe wrapped up into post-Hurricane Katrina and that entire environment in the city. And so I think that he kind of, in that environment, decided, maybe to explain that a little bit, after the hurricane, when I think we were all kind of questioning, why are we in the city and kind of what are our attachments to the city? I think that we ended up having a family that has very close ties to French and kind of Louisiana French and really wanted to start talking to me in French. And we started practicing kind of when I was in an adolescent. And as I mentioned as well, I had some neighbors who also spoke Creole, and that was a really formative part of my life. It was a unique opportunity to really learn the language. And I think one that really started making me think about, well, this is a language, especially for Louisiana Creole, that is from our state, developed in our state, and is one of the only Creole languages that emerged kind of in the United States in that way. And I think these are really things that are tied to New Orleans, tied to South Louisiana in really important ways. And I thought, you know, and it was kind of great to be able to grow up with that.
Yeah. And so when did you first learn of the OIF and decide that that might be worth connecting to Louisiana?
Well, it was when I first came. So after my studying, after my undergraduate, I ended up coming here to France. And I think, again, linked to that tie, the kind of a lot of interest in France, a lot of interest in Louisiana's ties to French-speaking places. And I ended up coming and pursuing my master's at Sciences Po, which is a kind of political school here. And it was there that I had the opportunity to go to a conference on the economic benefits of the Francophonie. And it became interesting because I realized that, for example, that Quebec up in Canada had a different statute from Canada itself. So I started questioning, well, you know, if Louisiana up until 1970 had 1 million French speakers, I ended up, you know, if I had this opportunity to grow up with the language and in Creole, and we have these really unique ties, not only just our own cultural impact through French and Creole, but also maybe there are real concrete economic and cultural benefits that we can bring from being part of such an organization. As Rudy was mentioning earlier, we have 88 members in this, you know, countries that are a part of this organization. That's a third of the world in terms of the countries that are represented. And I mean, I think that if we could become part of that, then it would be pretty, I think it would be great for us. And I think really bring our mark to it.
Well, it's interesting when you look at the website, and we'll put links to all the things we talk about in the show notes, which will be over at beyondbourbonst.com. But when you look at the OIF's website, you see the countries highlighted on the map, and then you see Louisiana, I think, in green, which is interesting, right? I don't know. I guess it's not the only state, right? Because you have the provinces separately in Canada or the entire country?
Yeah, that's right. So there's Canada, and there's also Quebec, and then there is Ontario that joined the organization a few years ago.
Yeah. So in that sense, it's not that, you know, on first glance, as a United States citizen, you look at it and you think, well, it's odd. But then when you look at Canada, there's sort of a precedent there.
Yeah, and that's when we'll be happy to go through kind of that process. It was kind of a long and,
We'll get to it, yeah.
It was a long kind of negotiation over 2 years, and I think exactly that question came up. And I think that just given the fact that this is a cultural organization and not necessarily political in its bent, and then also I just think that given the ties that our state has, I think a lot of the partners and people we were working with who are really enthusiastic as well, I think realized that this would be a real opportunity, both within Louisiana, at the national level, you know, in Washington, and then also internationally. So I guess if you would like, we would be happy to go through the kind of what that process looked like.
Yeah, we will certainly get to it. I do want to mention, so we talked about Scott, you obviously grew up here in the city, but Rudy, what is your relationship in terms of how did you come into play with not only with the OIF, but with Scott and with the push to have Louisiana become a part of it?
Yeah. So I'm from France. I was born and raised in Clermont-Ferrand. So if you threw a dart at the middle of France, you'd probably hit my hometown. Well, I work at the French Ministry of Foreign Affairs, so I'm pretty familiar with the work the OIF has been doing. And, well, I met Scott, and he told me that he was interested in having Louisiana join the OIF. So I thought it was a great project and we talked about it. And so I decided to get on board and that's how we kicked it off.
Yeah, we started just as a private initiative, which is pretty funny. You know, I think that it was an interest that I had while I was studying. I think we met in Paris and kind of, and then started talking about this initiative and kind of, and I think given his expertise about the Francophonie and kind of, and we started talking about it, we were like, well, what if we could get this done? Yeah, what would it take?
So let's talk about that a little bit in terms of, so it's been several years ago that you guys collectively sort of thought, hey, this is an interesting idea. Let's try to pursue it. On kind of a high level, what is involved in that? You don't just raise your hand and say, hey, we're Louisiana. We'd like to join this organization, right?
Yeah, so what you do when you begin, I guess, is you ask. You know, I think that was one of the first things that we did. We were very fortunate to have a lot of great people in Louisiana who are working in Baton Rouge and Lafayette. There's a wonderful organization called the Council for the Development of French in Louisiana that has really over the years promoted Louisiana internationally and kind of within French-speaking countries. And I think that they were very enthusiastic. And I think that one of the things is the encouragement and really encouraging us to maybe talk to the OEF and see what it would take. And that was one of the elements that we ended up working on, was reaching out to the OEF, having conversations with the OEF, and in maybe just a little bit when we use the acronym OEF, it's the what we were mentioning earlier as the International Organization of the Francophonie, and in French, the acronym kind of translates to OEF, but it's spelled OIF. But it, so what we ended up doing in that is reaching out to the OEF and becoming, they were, I think, intrigued, is, you know, I think very enthusiastic, but I think intrigued by the interest. And I think that one of the elements in exactly what you were alluding to earlier was, they wanted to see, we would have to do a formal application process, but one of the extra steps for us would be to get formal approval from the federal government, of course, and so that we could apply. And that was one of the things that we started working on and really communicating back and forth between the OEF, between officials in Louisiana, and with the Senate. So we ended up working with Senator Cassidy's office and other individuals in Washington to try to be able to work with the State Department so we could get the permission to move forward. And so we ended up, that took a long time. And we, a lot of emails later, we were joking that at the end of this process, and it was all included, but we ended up having 1,000 emails.
Yeah, that's right.
French and English and written between 9 and 2 a.m. You know? So it was a long process. But I think that what was wonderful about it is how enthusiastic people were, how helpful people were. And I just think that the amount of different people we could get involved so that they could also have their say in the process.
As I was reading up about sort of this journey you guys have taken, you ended up getting, of course, the governor, John Bel Edwards, involved, as well as some state senators that had an interest that are Francophiles. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. We had a lot. There's a great kind of delegation. We have kind of French-speaking senators, state senators in Louisiana. The governor's office was very receptive, and we had people helping us liaise with the governor's office. And I think that these were individuals who I think have been dedicated and really pushing and promoting French in the state. And I think that with us helping and kind of with us coordinating the initiative and them kind of speaking in Baton Rouge and talking to the individuals to kind of make sure that we were going through the proper channels to speak with the State Department and really express what the state wanted to do. I think that's kind of how that process came together. And I think it was great. I think we were kind of helping organize and push everyone together. And I think also coordinating with the people on the ground, but a lot of people were speaking and leveraging and talking and kind of making it so that it could come together.
Was there a hard or a long education process when you walked into offices here in Louisiana to say, hey, I think we should join this organization called the OEF? Did you get a lot of blank stares, or was there an awareness of the organization?
I think there are some people, so some of our, like the Francophone kind of French-speaking delegation we have in Louisiana, especially from Cotefil and sometimes in the Assembly, do go to some of the summits. So there are people who are very familiar, and they had been invited in the past to kind of attend those. So I think that there are people that were kind of not, had an eye towards, if we could make this an official relationship with the OEF, that would be great. But there is an education. You know, I think that there are people who are not familiar with some of these ties, and I think that, but people, I think, even if they weren't necessarily familiar or French-speaking themselves or kind of or Creole-speaking themselves, I think they did understand that this is part of the fabric of the state, that there are people and constituents and people that know what this is. And as you were mentioning, when you were down in, you know, in Lafayette, you knew that there were French-speaking communities and people that spoke. And I think people in Louisiana generally have that awareness, and whether or not they speak it, they feel invested in seeing it kind of come together.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of pride in both our French and Spanish culture, but maybe you see it a little bit more in the French culture because of the tie into Cajun music, for instance. You know, at Jazz Fest for the last, gosh, almost a decade, there's a band from Lafayette called Fofolet. Mm-hmm. And they are young people who didn't want the sort of Cajun French music to die off. And so they took it upon themselves. They were young. They're still young, but they're now, I think most of them are in their 30s, early 30s. They took it upon themselves to learn and try to preserve almost like an oral history. And you see that pride in Louisiana, in the music, in the food, you know, all those things.
And a lot of other types of music as well. I think that's what's fantastic. If you think about, there are a lot of, so even the origins of jazz in New Orleans, for example, is a really interesting story unto itself. If you look in the 19th century, New Orleans was kind of this, part of it's kind of the myth and the kind of, you know, what we like to tell. But I think it was also true that you did have what we call the Creole population of the city that lived downriver. You had kind of the American population, people who were coming in, quote unquote, upriver. So this is for anyone who's from outside of New Orleans, this is kind of what we associate as being below Canal Street. And you can see it today. We have that kind of look. We have all of these names. If you go to Canal Street, they're in French on one side and they're on English on the other side. And I think what happened, though, is in the Creole part of the city, this is a place that was pretty autonomous in terms of the way it ran itself for most of the 19th century. And what happens is, in the late 19th century, when you have a lot of different political forces and things that are changing in Louisiana, you have people who are French-speaking, part of kind of what we call in Louisiana Black Creole population, who are working and kind of living alongside African-Americans in different groups, and this is how you get jazz and other types of music that emerge. And so Louis Armstrong, when he's talking with Sidney Bechet and all these figures, is talking with different figures who are from these populations as well. So I think that whether it be jazz in the city in its emergence is definitely linked to kind of French-speaking and Creole-speaking Louisiana. Whether it be rock and roll with Fats Domino and people like that who are also from this community, I think you can see these types of influences. And it's, you know, and of course today we have music like Zydeco as well. So I think it's all of the music and kind of the culture that we see in the state is at least, if not directly, definitely kind of indirectly influenced by all.
That's a good segue and maybe a good time to take a quick break and talk about one of our sponsors. Today's episode is brought to you by my friends at the Old Number 77 Hotel. The Old Number 77 is in a building that actually dates to the 1850s, when French was still a very common language on the streets in New Orleans. Like back then, the Old 77 is still in a great location in the Warehouse District, just 3 blocks from the French Quarter. It doesn't house coffee anymore, but it's a great space to house you when you come for your visit to New Orleans. It's close to lots of great places to eat and drink, and it's near the streetcar lines, too. They also have a great rotating art exhibit that's free. It's put together by the folks at Where Your Art, and it's especially fitting since the area now near the hotel is now sometimes called the Arts District. The Old 77 has 167 rooms. It's small enough to feel cozy, but it still has lots of choices. They have interior rooms for those of you that don't want any hint of daylight after a long night out. They also offer premium rooms and artist loft suites curated by New Orleans artists. The old number 77 is home to an award-winning restaurant, Chef Nina Compton's Compère Le Pen. Whether you go for lunch, dinner, or happy hour, it's a neat place to sit and enjoy. I like going for happy hour myself and enjoying an old-fashioned along with a side of biscuits. The Old 77 is located at 535 Chapatula Street. Use code BBOLD77 when you book a room and save 25%. That's BBOLD77. Plus, you get a bit of lagniappe, a little something extra, in the form of a $10 credit at Tutla for coffee and pastries in the morning. All right, let's jump back to our discussion now about the Francophonie and Louisiana. We were talking before the break about the music. As you said that, something jumped out at me that I'm not sure that all listeners know. The first opera performed in the United States was performed in New Orleans. And we had for many, many years some great opera houses, the French Opera House, the Marigny Opera House, and several others. And so you're right, I tend to think about Cajun music. But from the earliest, you had that kind of music coming over from Europe here to New Orleans. And where that first opera was performed is very, very close to what was Storyville, that red light district where the music of Jelly Roll Morton and Louis Armstrong and all those really got its start and formulated.
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful, I think that these types of music and what you see, I mean, I think that probably a topic in the city, we talk about it a lot. And I think that people who have visited are familiar with it, places like Congo Square. And I think that you had people of African descent who were enslaved in Louisiana who would go there, and also free people of color and other populations who found themselves in those spaces exchanging music and kind of on a Sunday. And I think that it's funny because you have things like those different types of music emerging in New Orleans. You have kind of, you have the French Opera House and opera as well. And I think it's just you where we kind of associate New Orleans. I joke that New Orleans sometimes is as much a beat as it is a place.
Yes, definitely.
And I think that when you have people that come to the city and they feel the music and it's on display and it's in the public and each neighborhood has its own style and its own way that in its own kind of haunts that people visit to go listen to that music, it's not by accident. And I think that these are the, I think especially the way that it relates to the kind of French-speaking and Creole-speaking Louisiana is that a lot of this is in exchange with the Caribbean. Louisiana, if you look at it geographically, is closer to Havana than it is to places like in St. Louis. And so these were always our natural exchange and our natural ties. And I think that with the French-speaking, Creole-speaking, and the people who spoke Spanish all in this place, I think that you see that these ties continued and the different populations who called Louisiana home were forming and building and kind of improving their music.
Well, it's interesting that that continues to happen even today, right? I think post-Katrina, you had a lot of people come to help. You had a lot of people from South and Central America. And so you have this revival almost of that culture here in the city. You have always had, as you mentioned, the Caribbean influence in part from the uprising in what is now Haiti. But today in the food, in fact, we were just during the break mentioning the old 77 Hotel. Well, Nina Compton has a wonderful restaurant there called Compère Le Pen, and she is from the island. So she has that influence. And there's several other places that have really popped up in the last couple of years, kind of with that infusion, if you will, of those different cultures. So that makes sense. How does it benefit Louisiana and New Orleans to be a part of the OEF?
Well, I guess one of the areas, I think there's a kind of a symbolic side. And then, I think the symbolic side that we can talk about is just in terms of what it means for the state is very important. I think we've just joined a major international organization. It's one in which we're a community and a state that has, I think one of the ways maybe to frame Louisiana, and it's maybe not way that someone would think about it naturally, but it's true, is that we are almost historically a Francophone society, French-speaking society that became Anglophone rather than just an Anglophone.
Well, we would say that there are three major benefits. So a symbolic one, a cultural one, and an economic one. So if you want to start, Scott.
Yeah, I guess if you take the symbolic part, one of the ways I think, and maybe it's not the way that people are accustomed to thinking about Louisiana, but I think historically it's one we can really make an argument about is we're kind of a Francophone, French-speaking, and Creole-speaking society that became English-speaking. So, and it's a way, for over 270 years of our history, a large kind of plurality of our state spoke French. And I think that's important to know. So I think that symbolically, we do have a, one of the great things when they did, when Codofil and everyone was preparing the application, one of the terms that came up was having our seat at the table. And I think that's great. You know, I think that we are, there are people who have ties. And I think that people, you know, whether it be their own families or come to Louisiana, as you were mentioning, with people who come from the Caribbean or from wherever and feel an attachment to that culture, that they feel at home in that. And I think that if we can bring that image of our state open to the world and kind of symbolically in both our history and kind of the opportunities we want to create for ourselves, I think there's a really strong symbolism for ourselves there.
Sure, sure. And as you're saying that, it dawns on me that in the Garden District in New Orleans, we have the French consulate.
Yeah, exactly.
But right there in the heart of the Garden District. So you mentioned that there were three reasons, and that's one of the reasons. What are the others?
Yeah, so there is also a cultural reason. So, well, we said earlier that the OIF offers a wide array of programs in the field of education and culture. So now Louisiana will be able to access these programs. So, for instance, students in the state may be able to access scholarships, grants, researchers too. They may be able to attend conferences on different topics involving civil society. So it's very open and very broad. So it's a good way to create and foster cultural connections between Louisiana and the 87 members of the OIF. And the last reason would be more economic. So the OIF helps create strong and lasting business ties with all its members. So it's really active, for instance, in the field of digital economy, for instance. And also, well, I said that the OIF organizes a lot of conferences, so it's also a good way to bring people together and to, you know, have them talk and get creative in a way together. And also, the Sommet International de la Francophonie, the International Summit, takes place every 2 years, so in a different city. So the last one was a year ago in Yerevan, Armenia. So it also, you know, like a lot of stakeholders active in the field of Francophone affairs, if I could put it this way, attend the meeting, and most heads of state. And so it's a good way, you know, to create strong ties between countries and between like business partners.
And what is the benefit, if any, or what is the tie? We have 4 or 5 French immersion schools here in this area. And do they get any direct benefit from Louisiana's participation in the OIF?
Well, I think that what we can gain, I think organizations such as Codofil and a lot of different, the school systems themselves, there's a lot of grants and different things that are out there that they can access. And I think that there's also just in terms of exchange, bringing in scholars, bringing in teachers, having students go on exchange elsewhere. I think that this is really a way to reinforce the kind of French-speaking education in the state. And I think also, you know, I think we can orient ourselves and look towards French-speaking places, but also just part of the kind of Francophonie kind of ecosystem, if we can say, is also to promote Creole. I think there we have a lot of ties with these places, with places down in the Caribbean as well, who have their own Creole languages that we can also build these ties with. So I think in terms of the state, I think that one of the great opportunities is that we can be as invested as we want. And I think that as we deepen these ties, the benefits will become more tangible for us moving forward. And I think, as we were mentioning earlier, the kind of symbolic and having our history, but also wanting to build opportunities, the kind of cultural ties, and especially since Louisiana really has a very strong culture, but also someone that we can bring to elsewhere, but also one that we can bring people here, and I think would love to come to Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And then also the economic ties that we can build, go to trade conferences. I think all of this together is something that over time we can really build up for our state and have a kind of feather in our cap. And at the end of the day, if we really think about it, there are French communities throughout the United States, but I think that one of the great things that we could do as a state with kind of this history, a lot of the French schools, is maybe we could start attracting people who want to learn French to our own state and really start distinguishing ourselves in that way. So whether it be in New Orleans with the French schools or out in Lafayette as well, where they have a lot of schools as well, or even just university programs, I think the hope with joining places like the OEF is that we can really start thinking about, well, if someone goes in as a kindergartner into a French school, then maybe we can also offer them a program so that they can come out of university education in a French program as well, and then they can seek job opportunities. This is one that we'll be talking about and building up over years and decades, of course, but I think that there's been so much activism on the ground to make this kind of come together that hopefully the OEF will be an enabler. I think that it's a key that the OEF will be an enabler of the movement and the what people are already doing on the ground in Louisiana.
That's such an exciting and important point that you raised, because we have several friends who have children in French immersion schools, and we debated that with our own kids. And one of the things that you start to realize is that as the children progress, without an influx of students, as students move, maybe parents move and get other jobs, those classes get smaller and smaller. And unless you already have a French background, you're not going to jump into a school in fourth or fifth grade. You know, you, and so that's a tough thing. But if we are a destination within the U.S. or sort of a center point of a place to learn and preserve that French culture, then you may get people who are moving and already have children, for instance, that speak French and could continue an education. Today, the schools seem to be a bit hamstrung with, if you didn't start, you really can't just jump in again several years in.
Yeah, and I think that is, I think one of the things, and, you know, there are agencies and people working on the kind of promotion of French in Louisiana, and I think this has been a tireless and kind of, you know, like they've been really working to open up these schools over the past decades. And I think, as I mentioned earlier, for example, Codofil, kind of, which was founded in 1968, so the Council for the Development of French in Louisiana, has been working really on promoting French education. And I think through a lot of grassroots activism with parents, they've been able to open up a lot of schools. So we're now seeing that from kind of a handful of schools a couple decades ago, we're now with several dozen throughout the state. And I think in terms of just changing, you know, what, even if people don't come out necessarily speaking fluent French, being aware of the culture in ways that they wouldn't necessarily be aware of otherwise, and just kind of having maybe kind of a sort of passion for it as they grow up, whether we would be great if people are speaking fluently the language, but hopefully it'll give kind of legs and kind of help people build up the culture as we kind of keep advancing.
Well, and as you guys mentioned, there's certainly an existing passion for it. Bastille Day is celebrated here in New Orleans. There's a relatively new Fête de Fromage. You know, some of the fundraisers for the French schools are really, really popular events. So I definitely think that. And also, as we talk again about Lafayette, when I was in college, I had a professor named Barry Ancelet, who was such a force behind keeping the tradition, and not only in his own family, I think he only spoke French at home with the kids, but in terms of books and projects and exposing students like me who didn't take French, but at least got some of that French Louisiana culture. And so I would imagine that Lafayette would be a huge supporter of this initiative and could also contribute and benefit.
For sure. And I think it's a statewide, right? I think whether you're in Shreveport, New Orleans, down in Venice, you know, all over at Lake Charles, you know, doing the corners of the state here, I think you can benefit. And I think that's what's wonderful. I think that it's what, and it was something we were mentioning earlier, is just the reality that a lot of people may have ties and may have personal ties or may be invested through education or in whatever way to French speaking and kind of the Creole language as well in Louisiana, that history. But I think as well that people who come into Louisiana and just feel an attachment to the state and may not have a prior tie should also feel invested. And I think that the way that we open up that image and invite people into that culture will only make it stronger. And I think that that's what's great. I mean, if you really, the reality is if you're in New Orleans, I mean, you know, I think that the Bastille Day and these things are very much the imprint of New Orleans on them in the way that we kind of celebrate anything. But I think that, but even something as simple as, you know, not as simple because it's a huge festival, Mardi Gras and stuff like that. I mean, of course, it's rooted in this. And I think that a lot of carnival crews and organizations started off as French-speaking, you know, organizations. And it's not just as kind of hearkened to that past at all times. But I think that one of the things to say is that that past infuses our present. It's what makes us kind of have this passion in Louisiana and all of the different groups, whether, you know, all the groups over the years, we have a lot of strong Irish presence, we have a strong Italian presence in Louisiana. And I think that in any culture, and I think African-American culture in Louisiana, everyone who's in the state, who has kind of built their own impression and kind of their own culture in the state, also borrows from French-speaking Louisiana, Creole-speaking Louisiana, and vice versa. And I think that building that image of itself is, I think, very inclusive, and I think kind of adds a little bit of the fire to the state's culture.
I do think that's one of the many things that's appealing about New Orleans is that visitors can find themselves in the city, right, through their own culture, whatever that might be. And certainly if our listeners have been to France and then come to New Orleans, you definitely see the connection, right? You can see it. We spent some time in the town of Versailles. We went to the palace, of course. But when you wander through the village of Versailles, you can look up and almost imagine yourself in parts of the French Quarter, you know, with a very, very similar architecturally. And I think that, you know, for people, there's that tie.
And I went to New Orleans for the first time last year, and I was pretty impressed. I could tell that French was still very much alive there. Funny story, but I was with Scott, and we were in an Uber, and we were speaking French, and the driver suddenly turned around and she told us, "Oh, vous parlez français, so you guys are speaking French." And we're like, "Yes." And her French was perfect. And you could tell that she was from the city and she was also a native French speaker. So yeah, it was pretty impressive.
And I think that's important. You know, I think those types of experiences, they would joke kind of sometimes that French in Louisiana is kind of hidden in plain sight. I think it's very visible. I think that people are proud to speak it and really building it up, but people, because the reality is that people have very layered identities in Louisiana. It's a state with a lot of complexity and people. So, I mean, and I think that's important. You know, I think that meeting people and kind of where they are and the way that they identify themselves, and then if they want to speak French, they'll feel comfortable in certain environments and they may not feel comfortable in other environments. And I think they might not expect it in other environments. So we're in an Uber, we're speaking French, and the person is as surprised as we are, and we kind of go back and forth. I think that's important. And the other element is, you were mentioning earlier, just the aesthetic ties to the rest of the world. I mean, you were mentioning earlier, for example, that during the Haitian Revolution and kind of the emigration of people from Haiti, one of the fascinating things even in New Orleans' kind of architectural landscape is the fact that the people who were in Cap Haïtien, one of the kind of former, you know, one of the cities in Saint-Domingue, literally rebuilt their houses in New Orleans. So, you know, if you go to Cap Haïtien, and you're in Jacmel and these places in Haiti, and you're in New Orleans, you see the kind of imprint. And that's, we live in those houses today. You know, I think that you don't have to look far to see the culture. It's not something that's in our past. I mean, we obviously have, that culture keeps living and kind of evolving. But if you want any bigger impression, we also, it's our physical environments as well.
If you go downriver of the French Quarter into the Marigny and the Bywater, you very much see that style of architecture. Yeah, without a doubt. In fact, it's also interesting, Nina Compton, when she opened her second restaurant, she opened it down there in the Bywater. And I think there's very much a tie. And you're also very physically close to the water and the river and sort of that, you know, I would like to believe too that the work that you guys are doing and the tie in the past and the present also sort of helps on a macro level that when people can see the layers that you mentioned, Scott, and the connections, I'd like to believe that it just makes us a little bit more hospitable on a big picture. Not New Orleans, right? New Orleans is very hospitable. But I mean, for all the differences these days with politics and culture and religion, it doesn't take very much to see that there is a similarity or a commonality. And I'm hopeful that the work that you guys are doing is another step towards that for people.
Well, I appreciate that. And I think hopefully, and I think what you're mentioning, you know, the reality is that we might not always think about the ways that we're connected to other people, but those ties exist. And I think that it's wonderful. I mean, whether people are in Dakar, in Africa, you know, in Senegal, in Africa, whether it's Paris or Montreal, there are ties to us. And I think that one of the things that when we were working on this initiative over the course of 2 years was, whether it was at the state level in Baton Rouge and Lafayette, and, you know, and then whether it was at the national level in Washington or the international level, working with governments and trying to iron this out so Louisiana could join. And we joined last October at that summit that Rudy was talking about in Yerevan, Armenia. They voted on us unanimously to join this organization. It shows how much goodwill. I mean, if you think about it, 80 something members of all the members of this organization voted unanimously for us to join their international organization. And it's because they think that we have these ties and that we kind of made the case ourselves. And We were talking about it earlier, but Louisiana did prepare a formal dossier, you know, like a large application that is beautifully written in French, and it lays out our, you know, it's kind of our credo. This is what we want to do. This is how we want to get there, and this is what we're doing. And this was beautifully put together by this board, put together by Codofil, with all of these volunteers in Louisiana who worked on it passionately. And I think that we didn't have a very long stretch to do this because it took a long time for us to get the authorization to even apply in the first place. So by the time we had to do it, we had to do a kind of, you know, full sprint to the finish line, and we pulled it together. And I think that just for us as a state, what a wonderful message. It's about our connections to the world, of course, and we need to be building those. But at the same time, it's the world recognizing that we have those connections as well and validating that. And I think it's wonderful. I mean, we are in an, I think that no matter what, you know, I think in America we are. It's a wonderful, wonderful culture that we have, and it's in no small part due to this French and Creole and this passionate history that we have, and one that we need to put on full display and include everyone in that narrative.
Rudy and Scott, I so appreciate you guys taking the time. Again, it's late in Paris. I appreciate you taking the time to share with us the story about this passion and helping Louisiana become a member of the OEF. We'll get some information. We're offline, some links that we can put over in the show notes so that people that are really interested want to learn more, they can do that. But again, guys, thank you so much.
Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
Merci.
Merci.
I hope you enjoyed that discussion with Scott and Rudy. I hadn't heard of the Francophonie before Scott's brother told me about it, but I enjoyed learning about some of the many influences French culture and language have had on New Orleans. And I'm excited about the possibilities that joining the Francophonie may have for Louisiana and for New Orleans. We'll put links to the organization as well as some other resources that Rudy and Scott shared with me over in our show notes at beyondbourbonst.com.
If you're enjoying the podcast, please share it with someone who loves New Orleans. New episodes are available every other Wednesday. Until next time, laissez le bon temps rouler.
Thanks for listening to the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. Find us anytime at beyondbourbonst.com.